So let's go back to the DEI work and how that's showing up in investment advisors. And how did you start thinking about DEI, ESG, ABC? You know, a lot going on in this world. How did you start thinking about it when working with Santa Cruz?
Yeah. Well, like I had mentioned earlier, it was first getting clear on what their priorities were. Mm-hmm. Investment performance, you know, meeting or beating peer benchmarks was one priority. Greater alignment of assets with their mission, including through integration of ESG, through hiring diverse managers, being able to manage their new women's empowerment funds, so gender-led investing, aligning with the UN Sustainable Development Goals in terms of reporting. So there were a number of, if you unpack alignment or impact, you know, there was a number of layers to that that an investment consultant could add value through their knowledge. So what I was looking for through the RFP questions and in talking, interviewing the consultants was, did they have a definition of best-in-class ESG managers? And what did that look like? And how did they develop that? What were their inputs? You know, how granular were they in their thinking about it or not? And I'll tell you, there's a big range out there.
Well, right. So what are you seeing? So
I see a very small
with all the big boys and the small firms and the boutiques, you know, firms as well. What are you seeing? Are people like coming to the table with new ideas and good strategies or what?
Well, on the ESG front, you know, ESG's been around longer as a as a institutional investor movement mandate than, say, hiring diverse managers. So there's much more thought leadership in that area and adoption by the majority of the field in the direction of best practices. But I would say there's still a small handful who are really, I think, what I would consider best in class, in that they, as a consultant, have a framework for evaluating managers, and they expect their managers to have a framework for how they integrate ESG and what that means to them. You know, is it a core philosophy of what they do, or is it just, oh, we need to have a ESG product line to compete and let's slap one together and throw it out in the marketplace? There's a lot of that going on too. Similar on the DEI front, there's a small number of firms who have really embraced this, and I would say are in the leadership position of best practices and evolution, and have been doing this for almost a decade, whereas most of the field is just now starting to wake up and figure out how to collect the data, modifying their systems to store the data, being able to report it to their clients. That's probably where the bulk of the field is.
And are you seeing any trends in terms of like who's further along? Because I keep thinking of these, you know, large institutions. Sometimes, you know, pluses and minuses of working with some of the larger ones. But I'm just wondering, are you seeing any trends? Do the large institutions of the large RIAs or whatever, am I correct? They may have a lot of bureaucracy, so they may not be able to, you know, pivot as quickly as possible to say, okay, here's DEI, let's embrace this and figure out what that means for our firm. Or are you seeing like the smaller ones just like, you know, saying like, we specialize in this, or are you seeing any trends, I guess?
Yeah, the smaller firms and the more boutique firms are a little more nimble and can move faster and have moved faster. Mm-hmm. But, you know, a conversation that Sue and I had was the opportunity for a smaller foundation to punch above its weight by influencing a very large institution and what their practices are. And and where does Santa Cruz Community Foundation want to make its mark in this area? Is it local that you want to make sure your donors are happy? Is it at the consultant? Is it the field? You want to share what you've done and influence the field? Is it at the consultant level? You want to help move the whole consulting field or a particular consultant ahead, you know, or is it sector wide, you know, like a a large private foundation might also be doing policy work and in alongside their other work. So, you know, we also wanted to think a little bigger than this is just an administrative RFP process, but this is part of a strategic alignment and the mission and values of the organization, and how can the foundation influence. And
of course, you also have to thread that with the needs that Sue and the foundation have, all the back office support too. So maybe some of the smaller firms may not be able to handle the back office such as the larger ones do. Is that fair?
You know, I was surprised to find out that I thought Santa Cruz was a little unique in that, like, their investment consultant even handled all the stock gifts and stock gift processing. They did all the reporting for separately managed donor advised funds. They did the reporting on the charitable remainder trusts and the portfolio management. So it was really a one-stop shop. And I thought that might be a little difficult to find with traditional consultants, but I was pleasantly surprised that both traditional consultants, outsourced CIOs, a number of them said we can step up and definitely do this, and we're doing it now. Others were very clear, like, that's outside our scope of work, mm-hmm. and we just don't do that.
And Sue, for you, I'm just curious because Santa Cruz always pushes the field a little bit, and so you have the Women's Fund, you have the Impact Investing Fund, you have SRI, you've got ESG, you've got now this DEI piece and all of that. I'm just wondering, you've got a lot cooking, right? And you're ahead of the field. Do the donors have any idea how much you guys are moving the field, or how do you communicate that? Because it's pretty exciting what you guys are doing.
Yeah, I'm not sure how many donors would be aware of what else is going on in the field. I mean, they know us as their community foundation. There are some that have come from other community foundations, and some sophisticated ones. But innovation, the collegiality and innovation have been the two pieces that have kept me engaged in an administrative and finance role for 20 plus years at the same organization. I love the innovation, and so have, you know, I had a long-term CEO for the first 18 some odd years or so, and then Susan True has come in the last several years, and she's ready to really go, and it is conversations with donors that drive it. You know, they'll say, well, what about this, or what about that, or do you think we could do this? And so there has been, I think the racial equity DEI piece is really interesting, because even though it had already been started, and then George Floyd hit, and I'm sure everybody has felt this, it was, what can I do? What can I actually do in that regard? This presentation that my finance chair and board chair saw initially, and then we brought to the committee, really was practical, like, in terms of here are some nuts and bolts steps you can take to show the stance you're taking, whether it's your investments or whatever. So that was really inspiring.
And was that Bert's presentation?
Bert did shared with us a presentation he had done with another organization. And it was, it was moving. It got everybody who watched it very fired up and felt like there's something practical here that we can do. And for Susan, that she can talk about with donors, that was really inspiring.
And so, Bert, can you give us, you know, a takeaway, and even, you know, from that presentation, and I'd love to hear from both of you, why does diversity matter within the endowment space? Like, you know, I'm looking to maximize my return, right? So why do I care? So one, you know, Bert, if you could kind of just give me a bottom line as to, like, why I should start thinking about diversity and any conclusions that you would lift up from the presentation that you made to Sue and the Finance Committee?
Yeah, and maybe for the listeners' benefit, let me just give a little context of what this presentation was. Sure. So Community Capital Advisors, the firm that Mark and I are with, have partnered with the Racial Equity Asset Lab, an organization founded by Erica Seth Davies. And Erica has developed a framework for looking at racial equity practices, specifically within investments and investment policy and investment decision making, and looking at a continuum of best practice or a continuum of competency, and eight different factors that can be evaluated at the organizational level. And so this work is based on the work that she and I have done together over the last 10 years at Silicon Valley Community Foundation, where I was at, and APFE, the Association of Black Foundation Executives, where Erica was at, and then through funding that she received to develop this into a practitioner's guide. Now we're doing this as an assessment service for foundations, family foundations, community foundations, private foundations. So what we showed Sue and Susan and ultimately to report was the process, the framework, and the findings that we had had for another foundation, and that's what was presented. The why, so the why is this important? Well, first, from a fiduciary point of view, a board has a fiduciary duty of prudence, which they all pay attention to when it comes to finances, investments. But they also have a fiduciary duty of loyalty to the mission of the organization. This is a charitable organization with a charitable purpose. And that means being equitable. That means being fair. That means ensuring that everybody gets a shot at being an investment consultant, being an investment manager, managing a portion of the foundation's assets. And if you look at your manager roster and they're all white male, which generally most portfolios are, owning the firms, running the portfolios, making the investment decisions, then from a diversity of thought, cognitive diversity, you're lacking. And if you believe that diversification is one of the keys to performance, then diversification of thought and sourcing of ideas is also important. There's a fiduciary reason to do this. There's a performance reason to do this. There's a societal reason to do this. There's, we talk about risk all the time of volatility and risk of not meeting your payout. Like, well, what about equity risk? What about not ensuring that our society is equally represented and equitably represented and share in all the opportunities, including money management? And then the last reason I would say is that, and particularly for small foundations, they say, well, what is my small amount of assets gonna make any difference in a $1 trillion financial market? And actually they do, they make a huge difference, because as we were talking earlier, the small organizations are more nimble, they can move more faster. They're the thin edge of the wedge, as I like to say, that can fund a first-time manager or a newer manager who's getting going, can make it safe for the follow-on money that might be a private foundation that then makes it safe for the pension money to flow in. And so even though it may be a small amount, what you can do with that is important.
Having that first client, having a foundation in your roster. So let me take a different question. So here we are. I think all three of us identify as white, and we're having this conversation about diversity. So how do we talk about that? It's an interesting conversation for three white people to have. And Bert, do you want to take that on, or Sue, or you want me to start?
I'm happy to. So I mean that's kind of my starting point, obviously, in almost every conversation, especially if organizations that are saying, "Hey, we like what you did at Silicon Valley Community Foundation. Can you help us?" Which is why partnering with somebody like Erica, who brings not only a person of color, but a female perspective, is so important to the work, to I think to make it real, make it authentic. And then, you know, my own personal learning journey starting 10 years ago has been that I always have something more to learn in this space. And just having the vocabulary and the, to be able to talk about it in a way, it takes time and gives diving in, being intentional, taking time, realizing that you're a student and you're starting from scratch and you have blind spots. And I keep, you know, I just said Erica something today. I saw a class, a webinar I want to sign up for about beyond fragility and dismantling racism when you're white, and it's for white leaders. And it's like, yeah, I mean, even though I've been doing this for 10 years, I still have so much more to learn to be able to talk fluidly about it. And what I'm finding with boards and board committees and foundation leaders is they want to do the right thing, but they have to invest the time to have the knowledge and the vocabulary to be able to actually talk about it.
Yeah. Sue, anything you want to add to that? Or?
Yeah, similarly, Bert's way more advanced than I in this area for sure. And he's been working with all these managers and so forth and seen the good work that so many of them are doing that don't usually gain any spotlight. But I will say last fall, we do our annual evaluations every fall. And last fall, when we come up with our goals for the upcoming year and so forth, and Susan required every single person in the organization to have something in their goals that related to racial equity. What could you do? What could be a goal? And we had talked a little bit internally, and I'm like, finance and admin? I mean, I'm not influencing people or anything like that. And so I think I said I would, you know, take a webinar or do something like that, at least one. And then this conversation started happening, and it's like, wait a minute, I am the person in the organization who can, you know, I knew Bert, and I have a history to know enough about his integrity and who he is, and I'd go to any workshop he was doing, you know, so I had confidence putting him before, you know, my finance committee for sure, but I thought Susan might be interested, so I started with that, and then it just took off, and then that's made me feel really good about advancing the possibility of how our assets could be leveraged in that space. And you know, and one thing Bert used to say, you know, it's just everybody has the ability in some respect, you know, but not everybody has the opportunity. And the opportunities that some of these other managers, they're smaller or whatever, that if you just put them in the pool with the options that are available, at least if they're in the pool to begin with, perhaps they'll start coming out with, you know, greater numbers in the field. So that's sort of where it went for me. And I've got lots more to learn, but I feel really good about the conversations that were started. And you know, for the other folks on the finance committee, there are people that are finance people and seeing how they could incorporate it into their work, you know, their financial advice and practices and whatnot. It was inspiring that way.
Yeah, so it's trickling down to the finance committee members. And yeah, so that's pretty cool too.
Yeah.
What I like too is, you know, for the most part, the finance and admin group, bean counters in the corner, right?
Yeah.
The real work happens on program team. They're making grants, they're doing policy work, you know, et cetera, and pushing this DEI work. And I've been doing that for years, right?
Yeah.
But the finance and admin group, like, they're sitting on literally billions of dollars. And that's where things can really move, as you were just saying, Sue.
Well, and the other piece, because we started to talk about this a little bit earlier too, about whether a community foundation can make a difference in a larger industry, larger home.
Historically white male, straight, right. You know, right. Check down the list.
So we've had a fantastic relationship with the incumbent over years. Mm-hmm. Clearly, he and his team, which has had extremely little turnover. Mm-hmm. So pretty much he and his team have really done a top-notch job for us. The fees are reasonable. They've come down as our assets have increased. And we've talked about, some of these other things, using some of the SRI asset allocation for our impact investment program. And we can do that. And then this women's equity portfolio came up. Ooh, what happened there?
You're fine.
Oh, okay. It looks like I just had a little power outage, but my monitors just blinked out. But that's good if you can see me. So he started to talk about this, and some of our committee members would start suggesting, what about this? Or could we get into these other types of funds? And he would come back with, and this has been over the last 2 years, there's just not a lot out there to choose from. And there's just not a lot in the field. And all of a sudden he started paying more attention and thinking, how can we do this? So towards the beginning of this work that we were doing with the finance committee, he actually did bring in a portfolio that we could have, this women's inclusion portfolio that we had a particular donor interested who was very familiar with investments in that area, who was pleased with that work. And so that was really great. And I will say, when he did the final interview for the RFP process, he actually brought in some people from New York that we had not seen before, who were very engaged in this work and who were excited about working with him and his clientele, clearly us, in terms of looking at other possibilities. So, maybe that's a little crack in that large brokerage firm piece, that maybe we will make a little difference there. But I think the conversation has changed. He talks about this as being a refresh in his practice.
Great.
And that's, it's encouraging. Great. Yeah, that's
encouraging. Yeah. And I think we just all need to be very aware of creating pathways. Who's in the room? Who's not in the room?
Right.
Whose room is it? And let's have more inclusion. So that's great. And I like the idea too of a smaller foundation. What did you say? The edge of the wedge, bringing folks along. I think that's a cool image to think about. And really how smaller foundations can lead the field, because so many times it's the larger foundation saying we want to do this and they have resources to do that, but sometimes the smaller foundations really leading the field. So I think we have another example of that. Any final conclusions or thoughts on this, on this idea of the RFP for an investment consultant, whether it's around DEI work or just something to think about as you're navigating this process?
Well, from my perspective, I cannot say how valuable it was to have the depth of experience and knowledge and relationships that Bert had with all kinds of managers and so forth. And as he got to know us, honing it down to a certain group of those, and then working with the committee to whittle it down to 7 invitations, I think it was, to submit a proposal, then whittling it down to 3, which were organizations I never would have reached out to. Maybe 1 or 2 of them that are familiar in the community foundation field, but not the breadth of which Bert approached it. And then the analysis that he did was way deeper than I could have ever gone, certainly on the limited amount of hours that I have right now. Right. But even my knowledge base is nowhere near having that ability to really hone in on what the important issues are. So I just can't say how valuable that was to bring that in. And to do it in, I don't know, what was it, 3 months, 4 months? Let's see.
4 months.
July, four months maybe. Yeah. To really bring it in. And my committee was just dumbfounded. They were thrilled with the amount of work and the depth that they were looking at these issues. So
that's great.
It, it was a very successful consult for sure.
For having just complete, thank you, Sue. That's very kind to share about our dear friend, Mr. Bert. Bert, when you just finished this process, right? It's pretty fresh. Any surprises that you found during this or any ahas? I know this is not your first time, but were there any surprises that that occurred during the process or something you were particularly struck by?
You know, with each of the RFP participants, I gave them the opportunity to give feedback of why they weren't selected. And that was very insightful to hear. And I gave them very candid feedback because, I mean, you know, why not help people advance?
Right.
So I think one of the things I was most pleased with was not only did Santa Cruz Community Foundation feel like they were advancing their game, but so did the incumbent, and so did all of the folks who weren't ultimately selected, but were really grateful for the experience and the feedback and helping them understand what their strengths and weaknesses were. So
that's great.
Yeah, that was a good outcome for, felt like a win-win.